Good morning, everybody. This is Lenny Lawson, the car guru, and I'm sitting here working on my inbox. I've got to do some blocking or some, what do you call it when you tell them you don't want their emails anymore? What is that? It's down here in the unsubscribe. Yeah, that's what I need to do. For some reason or another, Rocket Mortgage thinks that I want to hear from them multiple times a day. Car Mover LLC. I must have shipped something with them or inquired about them because they won't leave me alone. Lazy Days RV. Omaha Steaks. I know where that came from. My grandson is 13 and he loves to cook. And that's a boy that's after my wife's heart because I've never been that interested in cooking unless it involved open flames like on a grill. But anyway, that's why I'm getting the Omaha Steaks things, because we bought him a package, a gift pack from Omaha Steaks. And, of course, it had like, I don't know, four ribeyes in it, two fillets, and a bunch of chicken fried steak and a bunch of other stuff. I think he ate it all in 2 days, so it didn't last very long. Yeah, Hotels.com, Colonel Littleton. Are you familiar with Colonel Littleton? They make some of the coolest leather stuff. Now, I'm not going to unsubscribe from them. They're in a little town in Tennessee. I think it's called Linville, Tennessee, and they make some of the finest leather products that you will find. But it's called Colonel Littleton. And yeah, Linville, Tennessee. And make some really interesting gift items and stuff, but briefcases and backpacks and duffel bags and stuff like that. It's way too expensive. But, you know, sometimes if you want good stuff, you got to be willing to pay for it. That's the way I look at it. But, yeah, a lot of this I need to go through Pottery Barn. My wife must have been playing on my computer. There's no reason that Pottery Barn would be sending me emails. So I wish I could hire somebody to do this. I could get one of my secretaries. Well, I don't have a secretary. I've got office folks, but they don't really. You know, I've never had a secretary. My dad never had one either. He did when he worked for Chevrolet, but I've never had one. I just pretty much did all of my office stuff myself. I mean, if I needed to type a letter, I typed it. You know, if I needed coffee, I got up off my you-know-what and got me some coffee. I didn't call anybody to do it. I think that would have just made me lazier than I already am. I'm not lazy. I'm just kidding. So we're going to talk about some interesting topics today. We're going to talk about the 10 greatest sports cars of all time. Now, you may not give a rip about sports cars, but I do. And, you know, a lot of these companies that built these cars, the sports car is just what you call a halo car. It's something that gives their brand, I don't know, special consideration. Puts them up on a platform with few others. You know, when you think of like Ferrari, Porsche, you know, those are some of the most famous names, Jaguar, and Lamborghini even. Do you know Lamborghini made their living building before they started building exotic sports cars? Tractors. They went straight from tractors to sports cars. You know, Mr. Lamborghini wanted to buy the Ferrari business from Enzo Ferrari, and Enzo said, I don't sell it. I won't keep it. And so Mr. Lamborghini got mad. He said, well, I'll just make a car that will outdo your car. Now, he never has. Ferrari is still the most prestigious brand in the world when it comes to sports cars, but Mr. Lamborghini has done pretty well, and one of his cars is on this list. So we'll get with that here in just a minute. Okay, welcome back to this holiday edition of My Car Guru. You know, a lot of people are off. You may be off. You may be permanently off in joyful retirement, blissful retirement. Or you may be bored out of your mind and listening to the radio at 9:05 in the morning. And if that's what you're doing, I appreciate it, because otherwise I would not have a radio audience. But I am thankful that I am doing what I'm doing. My grandson was here yesterday and with his cuz, And they were running around on the lot while I was doing some work at my desk in the dealership. And I don't even want to know what they're doing. But they go back to the talk to the techs sometimes and wander around. You can imagine when an 11 and a 13-year-old are doing at a car dealership. I just hope they don't get run over. Well, they didn't, so that's good. But they were out there running around, and they came in, sat down, and Cannon said, Pop, guess what we've been doing? I said, what? And said, been looking at cars. Well, what did you see that you liked out there? Well, I like a big old diesel truck. That's what I want to drive when I get my driver's license. And I said, you can pretty much forget that. Why? Well, number one, it's probably a lot bigger than what you need. Number two, diesel trucks are for pulling and farming and work type things. They're not for high school kids to drive to high school. Now, there may be some high school kids out there that would strongly disagree with that, but they're not the ones having to pay for the diesel fuel. And I said, Cannon, that's probably not a good choice. How about a nice little Nissan truck? He said, well, that'd be okay. You know, he's not too picky at this point. He said, Pop, in reality, I'd like just to have a junky old car, and then I wouldn't have to worry about it. I said, young man, that was probably the right thing. But I tell you what, if I put him in a car, which I probably will, no, I definitely will, it's going to be something that's late model, and it's going to be safe. It's going to have the latest as far as airbags and technology, and it's going to have 5-star crash ratings. And I'm going to track his little hiney everywhere he goes. And that's just the way it's going to be. You know, if I wouldn't have liked that, you know, if my parents had put some type of a GPS device on my vehicle, but I can track him with his cell phone anyway. But, you know, with that kind of technology and as many crazy things that go on today, if I put a teenager in the car, I'm going to know where they are. And I'm not going to take their word for it either, because I know how I used to be. So I just think that's a wise move, parents. And if you're not tracking your children because they don't want you to, then who's the boss anyway? That's what I say. Who provided them with the car? You did. So you have the right to determine what the terms are. Don't you agree with that? Okay, let's talk about great sports cars. I am driving a couple of these great sports cars that are on this list, and I feel fortunate every time I get behind the wheel of one of them, because I don't know what it is about the connection to the road, the way a sports car handles, the numbness that you get in a lot of vehicles, like, I don't know, minivans, pickup trucks, SUVs, crossovers. You just drive them and you get from point A to point B, and it's not real thrilling. When you get into a Porsche 911 and you start going on a curvy road or through a mountain pass, you all of a sudden, it clicks in your head. Something happens, and you think, wow, this car feels like it's a part of me. And that's what sports cars do for me. Plus, I like looking at them. I mean, it's artwork, isn't it? I mean, just sheer artwork. To think that somebody was able to design something that looks that good from all angles. And also the engineering that goes into them. It's pretty amazing. Number 10 on the list, though, is the brand that I was talking about earlier, is Lamborghini. You probably have heard of Lamborghini. The first car of note that they came out with that was really popular in the United States was called the Lamborghini Countach. And it had these gull wing doors or scissor. I can't remember how they opened up, whether it was like a scissor door or a gull wing door, but it was phenomenal, you know, and they were junk for sure. They were not put together very well. A lot of motor, just not a lot of quality. But that put them on the roadmap with all the rap stars and rap singers and movie stars and people like that. And, you know, it became kind of a cultish kind of a car. You know, and they make Lamborghinis that are expensive. You know, most of them, though, are in the $200,000 to $300,000 range. You may think that's a lot of money for a car, but that's really not for a what they call a supercar. You know, a very high performance, high end sports car. $250,000 is about the entry price for something like that. The Lamborghini Miura, though, is probably the most beautiful Lamborghini ever made. That's Miura. Came out in 1966, ran to 1972. It had a V12 engine. It was the fastest car at that time at 170 miles an hour. Can you imagine a car in 1966 going 170 miles an hour? That's unbelievable. And that car still looks good today. Lamborghini Miura at number 10. Number 9, I'm surprised this is a number 9. There were only 39 of these built. You ever heard the term GTO? GTO was not just a Pontiac. The first GTO was called a Ferrari 250 GTO. It is the most valuable sports car in the world right now. One of the reasons is they only made 39 of them. Came out in the early 60s. It was very successful on the racetrack. It is a basically, the people who swap these are the ultra rich, and the prices just keep going crazy. The last one I saw sell at auction was for $75 million. So it's pretty pricey. Good looking car. If you want to see one, just go online. It basically smashed all records for the most expensive cars ever sold at auction. So anyway, number 8 is a more pedestrian sports car. Acura came out with a car called the NSX. It was back in the early 90s, and it was earth-shattering in its approach. It was a mid-engine car. I've owned one and sold several others for people. I wish I'd owned it longer. I would have owned it for about 10 days. Should have kept it. They've gone nuts as far as value is concerned. I had $40,000 in mine at the time. Today, it's probably worth $110, $120, and that wasn't that long ago. The NSX was Honda's attempt to, you know, build a car that could be their premier automobile under the Honda name. Of course, it's not really under the Honda name. It's Acura, but it had the Honda engine in it. But it was introduced in 1990, and, you know, the exotic sports car world was caught off guard. Mostly exotic cars were built in Europe, but Honda came along and it put them on the map. Pretty neat car. And number 7 is the Jaguar E-Type. Now, Enzo Ferrari gave this car a very good compliment. He said it was the most beautiful car ever made. And that was from a guy that lived in Modena, Italy, giving a compliment to a company from England. But it is one of the most beautiful cars of all time. And the E-Type Jaguar, they made them in a convertible and in a coupe version. I kind of like the coupe, but the convertible is the one that brings the most money. Has a very long nose and a very short deck. That's very common for sports cars. This car came out in 1961. Jaguars, they were building sports cars a long time before that, but the E-Type was an earth-shattering vehicle to come out. Number 6 on this list, I don't think they belong there, but they are there, so I'll just tell you, it's the Dodge Viper. Dodge Viper was introduced in 1992. It had 400 horsepower, V10 engine. That's what made it unique. Had a clamshell hood and had, like I say, plenty of power. It just was kind of crude. Handled well, did well in racing, not super, but it was a halo car, again, for the Chrysler Corporation. And they bring big money as well. I sold one the other day that had been converted by a company called Hennessy. A guy named John Hennessy had done a basically a performance upgrade to this 93 Viper. And just a brute of a car to drive. Not fun at all. But I guess fun in a straight line or on a racetrack. But the Dodge Viper comes in at number 6 as the top 10 greatest sports cars of all time. Number 5, we can thank Carroll Shelby and a company called AC. AC was a company in England that built sports cars, and they were moderately successful. I mean, they were no Jaguar or anything like that, but they had a really neat body for a car. And a guy named Carroll Shelby knew about the company and knew that they had a nice body, and he was wanting to develop a car to compete in GT racing and race on sports car tracks, race at Daytona and Sebring and Watkins Glen and places like that, even Le Mans. And Carol said, well, what if I put a 289 Ford V8 into this this English-built sports car? He did. And guess what he called it? The Shelby Cobra. And today, these cars that were developed in the early 60s, ran through the late 60s, these cars are bringing in excess of $3 million in, you know, completely restored condition. So did pretty well with that particular vehicle. And that was really what led to the Mustang getting Shelbyized. It's probably not a good term, but Carroll Shelby talked Lee Iacocca into helping him get these 289 engines and 427 engines as well and put them in these Cobras. And then in turn, Lee went to him and said, well, what can you do to upgrade this beautiful new little car that we have called the Mustang? And Carroll was more than happy to take the 289 engine and spruce it up, put over 300 horsepower in it, and call it the GT350. And that is a legendary car that today is ringing the bell anywhere from $150,000 to $250,000 for a really nice Ford Mustang GT350. The number four car on the list is actually probably the best-selling. Well, no, it's not probably. It definitely is the best-selling two-seat roadster in the history of the world. And it's made by a company not in England, not in Germany or Italy or even the United States. It is made in Japan. That's right, Hiroshima, Japan. And the company is Mazda. Mazda MX-5 Miata. Now, I always know this car as a Miata. I have a 2017 Miata. Well, it really says MX-5 on it. But came out in 1989, and it was an immediate hit. We did really well with the Miata, and it's still produced today, and it's been improved dramatically, but it still follows the same formula. It's not a real powerful car. You know, if you get in a Mustang, a GT Mustang, and accelerate really hard and then go get in a Miata, you're going to be disappointed. But when you take them up in the mountains and drive them on a nice curvy road or the Blue Ridge Parkway or something like that, you're going to see why the Miata is so popular. You know, it makes a fabulous second car, and but it's strictly a two-seat car. It's got a little itty-bitty trunk, but enough for, you know, overnight bags or something like that. Can't get a set of golf clubs in it, though. If you're going to get a set of golf clubs, you're going to have to leave the passenger at home and put it in the passenger seat. But it has been a wonderful seller and still is a wonderful car, and I highly recommend it. If you just want to buy a nice little sports car and you want it covered by a warranty and you want to spend less than, say, $35,000, you can't beat the Mazda Miata. I'm just going to say that. Number three is the Mercedes-Benz SL. It was actually introduced in 1954. It's actually one of the oldest cars on this list. It was the first production car ever to offer fuel injection and had a top speed of more than 160 miles an hour. Leave that to Mercedes to accomplish that feat. Today, SLs can still be ordered with up to 621 horsepower. It's called the SL65, and it's produced by a subsidiary of Mercedes called AMG. That's their high-performance subsidiary. So they are very popular still. I mean, this is a car for pretty well-off people. You know, you're not your average Joe like me is not going to go buy a Mercedes. I'd just rather have the next car, which is the Chevrolet Corvette. You know, it's really hard to believe, but the Corvette has been in constant production for more than 60 years. It is really wears the mantle of America's sports car. Wouldn't you agree with that? It's like as American as baseball, hot dogs, and apple pie. Remember when that was the slogan for Chevrolet? But now we're in Generation 8. I recently bought one, and I'm a proud owner. I don't know how long I'll be an owner because, you know, I don't know how practical it is for me to hold on to that along with all the others. But this one is a absolutely remarkable car. It is the first, I guess, a diversion for Chevrolet. It's not really a diversion. It's way more than that. Chevrolet Corvette has always been a front-engine rear-drive car, and now it's a mid-engine car. Has a totally different look, and it's attracting a whole different kind of buyer. And so far, they sold about 20,000 of them in year one and 25,000 in year two of the C8, and I don't know what they're going to do in year three, which is the 2022 model like I have, but I'd say it'll be somewhere in that 20,000 to 25,000 range, depending on how many chips they can get. We'll take our last break, and I'll tell you what the last and most, I guess, the number one sports car of all time. We'll be back in just a minute. Well, you probably figured this out already. The number one highest-rated sports car of all time. It's been around a long time. You know, this was a derivation of the Volkswagen Beetle, the people's car. You know, Hitler was kind of involved with a guy named Ferdinand Porsche. And Ferdinand was the, he was the a member of the Nazi Party. I don't think he had a choice, though. It's either that or die. And so Ferdinand designed the people's car. Hitler never actually went into production of the Volkswagen, but they got shut down, and Ferdinand was also a tractor builder at one time, designed a lot of other cars. But after the right after the war, his son, Ferry, decided to take a Volkswagen, turn it into a sports car, and thus became the Porsche 356. And the 356 was basically in production from early 50s until, I think, about 64. And that's when they went to the new body style, and it was called the 911. And the Porsche 911 has been around since the first issue was in 1965. And pretty much you can look at a modern-day Porsche, the one in my garage, and it's a 2005 model. You can look at it and park a 1965 model right beside it, and you can say, yep, those two cars are related. And, folks, if you've never driven a Porsche, a car with a powerful engine in the rear, it's a different experience. You know, if I had to pick between driving it really fast through through the mountains versus the Corvette, I'd probably pick the Porsche, simply because it's just more in touch with the road. Probably a professional driver would be able to smoke the Porsche with the Corvette. There's no doubt in my mind. But, you know, that's, I'm not out to race or anything like that, but I just like to feel in control, and that car does it better than anything else that I've ever driven in the world. So those are the 10 greatest sports cars of all time. And I don't know whether you would agree with all of them. If you don't, I'm sorry. Notice that there's no Camaros there. There's no Dodge Challengers or Chargers or anything like that. There's no MGs or Triumphs or anything. So there's been a lot of incredible sports cars over the years, but these are, I would have to agree that these are some of them, with the exception of the Viper. Well, folks, if you have any questions, if I can help you for anything or with anything, just don't hesitate to call me. My name is Lenny Lawson, 423-552-2020. I am the Car Guru, and I'm here to help you. We'll see you tomorrow.